Hello and welcome to Batflips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. I am your host, John McGee. It's another special guest podcast for us this week, but before we get round to introducing our invited entertainment, I'd best point out which of the furniture is in our virtual studio. So we've got Darius here. How are you this evening, Darius?
I'm doing very well. Am I a particular piece of furniture, would you say, or just general?
You're an easy chair. You're nothing spiky. You're not like Tom.
That sounds about right.
So, I think so. And joining us on the line from Cincinnati, where he's currently in his car, having just got coffee with a friend, is the newly installed Reds beat reporter for The Athletic, craft beer enthusiast and all-round nice man on the internet, C. Trent Rosencrantz. How are you this evening, Trent?
Oh, fine. I think there are people who would disagree with part of that, but I appreciate it.
Which part would they disagree with?
There's some people who don't think I'm very nice. I think I'm pretty nice, but, you know, there are other people who might disagree.
Well, clearly the circles in which we move are the ones that have the best opinion of you, which means that they're the right ones, I would say.
That's the only kind of circles I like to move in.
Excellent. So you're here to talk about your own podcast, which is very different to this one. It's called Great American Dream, and we'll come on to that in just a moment. But before we dive into that, as I said in the introduction there, it's congratulations to you because you've just moved from the Cincinnati Enquirer to The Athletic. And before we get into the podcast, I wanted to ask a little bit about that move and what's going to change, if anything, for you.
That's a good question. You know, I'm not 100% sure what's going to get changed. The people who are paying me change. I don't have an office and, you know, I'm not in downtown with a nice view of the ballpark from my office anymore. I'll just kind of be at home and at the ballpark and at the airport and spaces in between. You know, I think a lot of it is, you know, and I'm not sure how... as much as I know, the sports media is so much different over in the UK as it is here than it is here. It's vastly different. But you know, I think I'm going to have less, I don't know, day to day transactional reporting type things. And of course, baseball is so much different than any other sport, be it you know, American football or your football. Or your basketball or anything else because of the schedule. You know, when you're on the beat, I don't know, there aren't too many more beat writers who do 162 games, but there are plenty who do 140. And that's a lot of baseball games, and that's a lot of stuff going on. I always kind of joke that when you cover American football, it's one day of stuff happening and 6 days of making stuff up. And at least when you cover baseball, it's 7 days a week of stuff happening. I usually don't use the word stuff, but I don't know what your guys' policy on that is. So
stuff's good. We like stuff.
good. So, you know, I think there's going to be more analytical pieces, more bigger picture pieces, less transactional reporting, less minutia, and just kind of a step back. And if you look at The Athletic, it's an interesting business model journalistically, which I will not bore you with. However, it's tough to argue with the talent that we're putting together. When you look around the country and so many of the top writers in the country are joining The Athletic, heck, it's become almost a joke on Twitter, like, oh, there goes The Athletic getting somebody else. I think, you know, there was a big American football coach that had agreed to be for one team, and then he backed out. And, you know, one of the jokes was, oh, he's going to The Athletic because there's a whole bunch of people. Today, Tim Britton, who has covered the Red Sox and is so good, he announced that he's going to The Athletic to cover the Mets. So, we just keep adding Mark Grigg, Pedro Mora. Oh, I don't know if I'm supposed to say Pedro yet, but I think everybody knows. You know, so many.
Andy
McCormick.
So it's been exciting, and that's kind of one of the things. It's almost peer pressure. because I wanted to be with, you know, all these guys, and it's been pretty exciting to be on a team with the likes of Matt Gelb and so many of these other guys. It's really exciting.
You mentioned in the podcast about getting your own call up to the bigs. So I guess this is it in a way, right?
You know, I feel like I've been there. I mean, certainly being at the Cincinnati Enquirer is great. I can't stress enough how awesome the Enquirer has been for me. It's been fantastic. And so this is just kind of, this is more like getting traded, you know, from one organization to another. Or signing a free agent deal, maybe more likely.
Yeah, well, yeah, you and the Athletic are the only people signing free agent deals this offseason.
It's true.
Okay, so let's talk about a Great American Dream. So for those who haven't heard it, can you just start by telling us what it's about and how it's different to most typical baseball podcasts?
You know, most typical baseball podcasts, and I've done some of those too, is kind of what we're doing right now. I mean, this isn't atypical. Sure. Great American Dream was a scripted podcast. I wrote every episode out ahead of time and recorded and did the interviews and all that. And it's basically just the life of a minor leagues, the life of the minor leagues reaching the big leagues that so many people don't, even in the United States, don't understand the difference and how people go through the minors and what that life is like. And so I particularly followed one minor leaguer, Red second base prospect named Shed Long. And, you know, I bugged Shed all season long, and he was great. And, you know, I used his experiences to tell some other stories, and a lot of those, a lot of different ones. One being the way that foreign players, like especially the Latinos, come to a new country. And how they have to adjust. You know, with Shed, I talked about African Americans in baseball, the declining interest, and you know, his dad said something that really stuck with me and still does. And his dad said, when Shed stopped playing football, everybody said, and to concentrate on baseball, they said, "Why are you playing a white boy sport?" And in the United States, baseball has become a white boy sport. And so there are many reasons for that, and that's talked about. But, you know, it was basically just talking about all the different parts of minor league life, even as little as figuring out how to find a place to live or what to eat or getting called up in the middle of the season and what that entails. And you know, long bus rides, because that's a big part of the minors that we see at Bull Durham and all those kind of that stuff.
Yeah, so the obvious question is, why Shed Long? So for those who've listened to the podcast, as Darius and I have, it's clear he's a really smart, articulate young man. But was that it? Or were you just lucky?
It was. I think it was part lucky. I had just talked to Shed, actually. And he was still at the top of my mind. And he was really my first and only choice. I think there were some things that were going in his favor. He was kind of a young, hot prospect. He hadn't had that much exposure before this, so I was able to jump on that. His agent at the time, shortly before the season, he switched agents, but his agent at the time was based in Cincinnati, and I knew him pretty well. So those two things helped. Also, one of the stories I wanted to talk about was the African-American angle, and as an African-American, he was very open about it, and we talked about it, and so it was just a confluence of things, and he was game. He said yes. That's the other part, and that's a huge part. And so it was really cool. I mean, I got super lucky that I picked the right guy.
And it's not a new story. You mentioned Bull Durham already, and there are some really good books about the minor leagues. So what made you think it lended itself to a podcast? Was it just something you wanted to try to do yourself, or did you think it would fit in? Yeah.
It was really just trying something new. You know, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I enjoy them, and I enjoyed some of the scripted ones. And at the Cincinnati Enquirer, we had great success with a fantastic podcast called Accused, looking at an old murder trial. And it was a fascinating, great job. And so I worked with some of the same people who worked on that and just said, hey, maybe we can do something different here. And it was a medium that the paper was really embracing. So it was just a different way to tell a story and to kind of stand out. And, you know, the negative was having to hear myself talk and to be the narrator and do that. It was pretty terrible, but it was so fun. And I thought Shed was great. And I am super proud of the whole project. You know, I'm no longer there, but it was something that I will always cherish that entire process and that product. I'm super, super proud of it.
Great. And we've said it's obviously Shed is the sort of central character of this, but there are lots of other players you spoke to. And actually I was quite surprised about the sort of depth and repetition of certain characters popping up. So Joey Votto, Zach Kozak, Ken Griffey Jr. are almost, you know, they're secondary level characters. They're on nearly every episode. I wondered how easy it was for you to corral them and get them to sort of reach back into the memory banks for this stuff.
You know, it was surprising how easy it was. Joey, you know, it's not tough to get Joey and Zach when you're on the beat, because I see those guys pretty much every day. And to find some time and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. And those guys really enjoyed it. You know, Joey, I thought Joey is he's a different cat. And he certainly added something to it, just gravitas just for his name. But he really gave some insight and was hyper aware of how his situation may be different than others, but also universal. And so he was great. And I went to him a couple times and he was always good. The other, you know, Zach was also there. Ken Griffey Jr. is, yeah, that one is a little different, you know, and I don't know that everybody has that access. It's funny. I covered him when he was at with the Reds. And we still chat occasionally. I would say every month or so. He'll call me or I'll call him. We just kind of have that relationship. I was lucky enough to be at his house the day that the Hall of Fame called to say he got in. Ken is, wow. You know, we talk about our kids a lot and we share a passion for Star Wars. So we talk a lot about, we usually just talk about Star Wars and our kids. And then I was like, hey, I, because actually the day that he called and I did the interview with that, because I don't try to, I rarely call him and ask for work stuff, but I had gone to an exhibit in Cincinnati. They had a Star Wars exhibit at the Museum Center, which had a bunch of the original props and stuff. And Anthony Daniels, who plays C-3PO, was there. And so I have my picture of me and Anthony Daniels, and I sent it to Ken. And he called and left me this great message where he's just cussing me that like I did some Star Wars stuff without him. And he's really mad and that we're no longer friends. And then he's like, call me back. And so we called and we talked for a while. And then I was like, hey, I'm doing this thing for work. Do you mind if I record something? He's like, oh yeah, no worries. But yeah, he's a big Star Wars fan.
That's amazing. Yeah, if we've learned nothing else from this podcast, that makes me like Ken Griffey even more.
Oh, you want to hear a funnier story about that?
So, oh yeah, yeah, go right ahead.
Before The Force Awakens, he was at the actual premiere, a week or so before it came out, and he texted me a picture of him on the red carpet with stormtroopers, and right. I said that was right before the Hall of Fame ballots were due when he was on the ballot. And I just remember texting him. I says, if you spoil this for me, I haven't turned in my ballot. I'm not voting for you. and so he didn't. But he said, call me as soon as you get out of the theater. And I was like, Ken, I'm going to a midnight show. It's going to be 2:33. And he says, I don't care. Call me. So after I saw The Force Awakens, I get in my car at 3 a.m. and call Ken Griffey Jr. and we talk for an hour about the movie.
Wow.
Excellent. So, where was he? Where was he on The Last Jedi? Which side was he on?
I've only talked to him once, and that was after he saw it once, and he was kind of on the fence. I'm on the record as being a huge fan. So
good, good. Well, I won't hang up the call then. I'm given that you've just said that.
I saw it. Actually, my daughter asked. She was off of school on Monday, and she asked to go see it. So that was the fifth time I saw it in the theater.
Oh, wow. I've only seen it twice. I saw The Force Awakens 3 times. So, you know, you're clearly outgunning me on that front. Okay, so back to the point, although the Star Wars diversion is always in the offing where I am, and it sounds like it is where you are as well. And we've just talked a bit about something with a narrative arc. So you did say that this was a scripted podcast, and this was your intention from the start to set out and do that. Did the story develop at all in season? I guess Shed getting called up to Pensacola was something that was unforeseen, perhaps.
You know, actually, I had it planned. It's funny. I originally said 6 episodes, and they're like, no, it needs to be more than that. It needs to be twice a month. It needs to be 12. And in about 15, 20 minutes, I had basic ideas for all 12 episodes, kind of basically like an arc of what they were going to be. And I had post-it notes, and I took a folder and had 12 spots, and I pretty much put them in an order that I thought made sense. And I figured sometime around there, there would be, I anticipated him getting called up to AA. And so I didn't even have to change that. And it all just kind of worked out.
Well, yeah, it's serendipitous, I guess.
Completely blind luck.
you mentioned a couple of the themes that come up, which you said you had specific episodes on that you wanted to cover. And I think in the intro you say it's a podcast about minor league life, but that's absolutely true. But for me, I think I said this to you when we were exchanging messages over Twitter, that it feels like so much more than that. It feels from an outsider's perspective from here in the UK, like it's kind of a social commentary on the States, really. So there's the episode on race, there's the one on immigration and language, there's this sort of migration, being on the bus all the time, wage poverty, you know, the chances of failure being enormous. It kind of, I mean, this is sort of maybe being slightly bombastic, but I was thinking about it the other day, and it sort of reminded me a bit of John Steinbeck, and I wondered whether that was intentional as well. This sort of, and the name Great American Dream, was it all part of the plan?
I can't say I ever thought of it that way, and I think you are overthinking it. That's beautiful, though. I love it. I love it. I'll take it. I should just shut up and take it. The name Great American Dream, that came pretty quickly. That was my first thought, just because, you know, I thought about the dream of making the big leagues, and Great American Ballpark is where the Reds play.
Yes.
And so again, that was one of those things that serendipitously came real early. And the biggest concern we had and the biggest discussion we had, whether it was Great American Dream or Great American Dreams. so, I mean, it was one of those things that worked out. But I think you're right. I mean, I did see it as kind of, you know, there are a lot of social issues in this. And I think baseball, more than any other sport, at least in the United States, gets those kind of parallels. And there's all the writing. I always think baseball writing is the best writing, and I'm biased, apparently, obviously. but, you know, we think about baseball differently than in any other sport in this country. And it's exciting. And so it was fun, and I was really – I've always liked the minor leagues, and I think I talk about this one of the things, because when I was growing up, that I got to go to that more often than the big league games. And so I got to see guys coming up, and I love kind of the knowing people first and getting to see people first. And I had so many like cool opportunities. One of the things I didn't even get in there on really early in the season, I had been working on some stuff, and I talked about going to the Tidewater Tides, which was the Norfolk's, or well, now they're the Norfolk Tides, but at the time they were the New York Mets AAA team in the early 80s when they had all this talent coming through. And so I just kind of recorded that episode, and I'm on a plane back from St. Louis, and the you know, I had an empty seat next to me, and the guy behind me had his hand on the seat for a second. I saw this ring, and it was a championship ring that said Tidewater Tides, like 1983 or 84, I forget which. I turn around, and I just say, "Hey, is that a Tidewater Tides championship ring?" And he's like, "Yeah, how'd you know?" And I was like, "I just recognized it. I would go to games there," and he was the manager for those teams. And oh, it's wow. just this small world kind of thing that said, "Oh my God, this is really cool." And then I happened to be in Toronto, and John Gibbons, the manager of the Blue Jays, was on those teams that I grew up seeing. And so I asked to talk him, and I don't even know if that made it anywhere. I don't think it did, but we had just this great conversation, and we talked for a while, and he was so excited to talk about it, and it was just really neat. And I think it's one of those things, like, you know, I think I said this there too, it's kind of like college, you know, I worked at a college newspaper, and whenever I see those people, we have a bond. When you're young and stupid and you do those kind of things, and you're working towards what you think you want to do, and to have those people around and to be reminded of that, I think there is some universal appeal, whether it's baseball or, you know, writing for becoming a big league baseball writer.
You've obviously spent a lot of time covering the minors and going to minors games, but I wondered if there was something that while you were doing this with Shed and talking to all these people that surprised you or brought into focus more for you that you hadn't really thought about before, but you kind of gained a better understanding from doing this.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, about the living conditions and you know, it's tough. But to talk to him that day where he had just gotten from home, he had been in Arizona, went to Louisville and Dayton, then back home and had to be in Daytona. You know, that's a really big geographic move. And he's in Daytona. And I said, "So what are you doing?" He's like, "Well, I'm in a hotel. I got to find an apartment tomorrow that I can move into." And he's like, "All my stuff's in my car." And I think that's in either the first or second episode. I think it's the second episode. And it kind of hit me that you know, it's one of those things, you know, and you realize, but when it hits you like that, like, I've got to do this tomorrow. I've got to find a place to live for me and four other guys or three other guys in the next day. It's just like, oh, that's crazy. And I will always remember him saying, you know, Daytona's kind of weird because it's either nice and expensive or cheap and not nice. And it was the only extremes, and there was no middle ground. So yeah, it was interesting. And I think that hit home. And, like, you know, what's funny is my sister lives in Pensacola, which is where the Reds AA affiliate is. And we went down there for a little family vacation during the season. And Shed was injured at the time. But I had him and a friend of his over for dinner. And my mom cooked. And he's just like, you know, I don't get this often. And it was kind of nice just to have a nice meal. And he was great. And we just had a really nice time.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about Shed and about some of the other people. But I think the other major character in this, and we've alluded to it a little bit, is yourself. You're not just the narrator, but you're kind of a feature character. There's quite a lot of contemplation about your own personal journey and your links, of course, to Jimmy Anderson, who himself was a major league pitcher. And I wondered at what point that authorial choice was made that you know, this sometimes felt like it was as much a podcast about you as it was about the minor leagues. And was that intentional, or did it just kind of happen?
It wasn't intentional. It was actually the last thing I wanted to do. But when you, I think I kind of found that voice in there pretty early. My first script for the first episode had less of that. And my editor said, I need to know why you're doing this. And, you know, you think about podcasts, especially a narrative type one, be it Serial or Accused, like I talked about. Because the narrator it's such a personal type of medium where even you guys, you know, your listeners know you, and that's what they keep coming back to, and they have to know that. And even though I'm telling the story of Shed, people, I think, to get it, hopefully, have to know why I'm telling this story and where I'm coming from and where this story is coming from. And I think it's part of the medium is that it's so much more personal than a radio show or a TV show or even a newspaper article, that it's almost like I have to prove that this really does matter to me. This wasn't just a job. This was a labor of love. And I think, I hope if nothing else comes through, that does come through.
Yeah, yeah, it absolutely does. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I, as you can probably tell from the tone of this conversation, I hope I can speak for you, Darius, and saying we both absolutely loved it. It was
just absolutely wonderful.
It's so good. I can't thank you enough. That's awesome.
So I think that unless Darius has any other questions on Great American Dream before we ask you a couple of questions on the Reds, I've got one more. But Darius, did you have any more before I move on?
Well, I think it's sort of related to maybe something we touched on at the start, but I was just wondering with the shift to The Athletic, whether you have any other kind of longer form type projects that you've been thinking about for a while that you're planning to get stuck into when you go there, and maybe you've got a bit more freedom now. You're not doing the day-to-day beats so much.
It's funny you mentioned that. And like, because somebody said, does this mean Great American Dream is not going to keep going on? And I said, probably not in that form, no. And honestly, I don't know if it could have done it again. Although I just finished something up and then I'm going to do this. And it's something I kind of started on that maybe if I were still at the Enquirer, I probably could have done it as a podcast. I think it would have been more difficult. And it would have to have changed and be a little different. But what I'm going to do is I'm kind of working with pitcher Tim Adelman, who pitched for the Reds the last 2 years. And it's kind of going to be like a diary type thing. And I actually just finished up the first one with him. And he is playing in Korea this year. And so I'm fascinated, you know, as I say in the podcast, I lived in Japan for a while and I really like Japanese baseball. I don't know much about Korean baseball. Bat Flips fans probably do. But, you know, so I'm talking to Tim and I'm going to check in with Tim and call him and talk to him, and he's going to write some for me and I'll help him with that. Just about his new experience over there. So maybe Great American Dream 2, Korea, you know? So it's interesting. And that's going to be the first one is more or less about how he made that decision to go over there.
That sounds brilliant. Which team is he going to play for?
The Samsung Lions.
Cool. One of our team, Joey, lives out in Seoul, so I will have to tell him to go and watch the Lions to see Tim. So we don't really have a Korean correspondent, but we have a Korean baseball enthusiast certainly amongst our number. Awesome. So the last thing about it's good. He sends us really cool stash. So yeah, I think I rock the only Doosan Bears jersey in Manchester is owned by me. Thanks to Joey.
So are you a United or a City guy?
I'm neither. I notionally lean towards City, but I'm not from Manchester originally. So my team is called Carlisle. They play in the very poor reaches of English football.
Okay.
And so the last question on the podcast is what if Shed now? Is it? Do you think he's going to be in the majors this season, or is he going to be in Louisville?
He's got a great shot. He's on the 40-man roster. So, you know, we kind of talk about that at the end in the last episode. I will see him Tuesday, or maybe not Tuesday, but I think he's in Arizona already. But he is in big league camp. That's going to be that's a huge step for him. I would be surprised if he didn't make his big league debut this year. I could see him. He'll probably start the season in Double-A. And maybe get to Triple-A at some point, or maybe come straight to the big leagues. I would expect to see him in the big leagues this year. And it's going to be pretty hard to be objective that day. I'll tell you what. you know, I think I think most people see through the through these 12 episodes, if you for some reason make it through all 12, that I like Shed a lot. And I think he comes off very likable, and I think other people like Shed too. So I've gotten to know his family. I wrote a kind of a story about it afterwards, and it's not in the podcast itself, but there's a story where, you know, myself and Sam Green, one of our photographers at the Enquirer, went down and spent a day in his hometown after the season, and we hung out with Shed and his family. You know, it was great. His mom cooked us a huge breakfast, and we were stuffed all day from his mom. And so it was really cool. And they're really nice people. I called him. He was one of the first people I called when I made the move. I told him. And then his dad called me the other day and said, "Hey, I think I saw this." And I was like, "Yeah." So when he gets up to the big leagues, it's going to be a pretty special day for me. Not as special as for a lot of other people, but it'll be really neat. I'm looking forward to it quite a bit.
Nice. So from what will hopefully be a fantastic part of the Cincinnati Reds 2018 season to, well, the rest of it. So we'll tackle what's going to happen in Cincinnati this season. So the Pocota projections are out today. Darius will correct me, as he is our resident BP staffer. I think it was 66 wins and the third worst total in baseball. So the question for you, Trent, is are they really that
high?
Or is it higher than that? Darius, was I wrong? You tell me.
I haven't looked at the absolute latest version. I know they did quite a late update, so I saw it slightly earlier.
I thought there were 74 wins. And I can see better than 70 wins. If 70 is the over-under, I'd take the over. The Pirates are not going to be as good. And they might be as better than the Reds still, but those are some wins they can get. It's a tough division. But a big part of their thing last year was starting pitching and just the health. Mm. And if their pitching is healthier, again, the guy who pitched the most innings for them in 2017 was Tim Adelman, who is now with the Samsung Lions. He led the staff in the innings pitched. If they can get some of their younger guys and some of the established, the Anthony DeSclafani, Homer Bailey, Brandon Finnegan isn't exactly established, but he's a little bit bigger track record. If those guys get more than the 122 innings than Tim Adelman did, I think they'll be a bit better just because of that. There should be some regression on offense. I don't think Scooter Jeanette's going to be able to repeat what he did last year. I don't see many four homer games in his future, but I was at that one. And holy moly, it was great.
Yeah, it is 74. There's actually the closest projected division between first and last at the moment.
Where have I got 66 from? Sorry.
The Marlins are at 66. It's not out of the question. And so are the Royals, of course.
Yeah, so I grew up a Royals fan, so.
Okay. You mentioned the pitching there. Is how much of on the shoulders of the young guys, you know, the Garretts and the Castillos, the Stevensons, do some of those guys need to step up?
Yeah, definitely. And I think Castillo is a guy that he's the only one of the younger guys that Brian Price has said he's in the rotation. And anybody who watched him last year, I mean, he was phenomenal. That was a trade that I had scouts the day it was made. You know, you get a couple of those every once in a while where they're like, holy crap, they got more for Dan Straley than they did Aroldis Chapman. and it's true. Castillo is... He has ace type stuff, and we'll see if he can do it. But if he can be what we saw, that's a really good start. But then you have all these guys that they've been banking on. Before the 2 years ago, they're saying, well, the future is Garrett, Stevenson, Romano, all these guys who were in Double A, and then they kind of got up. They were supposed to be in AAA in 2017, but because of what happened with Finnegan and DeSclafani and Bailey and Scott Feldman, those guys were called up earlier. And if anything showed, it showed that they weren't ready. Now, there's still some talent, and that's why there was so much well, hope that they could be the guys, but we'll see. And yeah, you're right. It's going to be, there's a lot on their shoulders to see that if this whole rebuilding thing is going to work or this team is going to be good in anytime in the near future.
You talked a bit about, I just wanted to ask about Votto again, kind of in a clubhouse sense. You talked about sort of how understanding and kind of he's a bit of a different guy, but obviously with the most experience in there, and he seems like an incredibly intelligent guy, and obviously I think must know how to get on with his teammates. How important, I think analytics has a lot of trouble with this kind of thing, but how important would you say having someone like Votto in a clubhouse that's likely to be this young is for a team like the Reds?
What's interesting about that, and that's an interesting question, I always kind of go back to that, is Joey is not someone who's going to go out of his way to be the rah-rah guy. You know, this team had Todd Frazier, who was very much that guy for a while. Mm. And Joey is not. He's not going to make himself, make everybody know that he's the leader. But because he is so good, I mean, he might be the best hitter in the National League. No, he is the best hitter in the National League. And he's probably the best hitter in the non-Mike Trout division in baseball. But he does it so much so that not just – whereas Mike Trout, you just think this is an alien from another planet who is just – you know, like you can't look at Mike Trout and say, how do I do that? What can I copy? Because you're just like – well, the guy's a god. I mean, he's just something. It's like, how do you be Superman? No, whereas Votto is more like Batman, that he kind of takes everything that he can and every advantage and every bit of knowledge to try to be the best that he can. And you see that a lot of guys talked about it last year, that they were more patient at the plate. They would only attack certain pitches in certain counts to see what they had, and they weren't afraid to get deep in counts. You saw guys choking up a little bit more, and everybody said, well, if Joey Votto does it, it must be okay. You know, it must work. And I think that's a bigger thing, is just that they have an example. And, you know, he's worked with Billy Hamilton and Eugenio Suarez and some of these guys where he says, hey, at 3 o'clock, I'm going to be at the cage. If you want to be there, you can be there. And it starts sometimes, I know I talked about Billy and Eugenio about this, as they said, they would just go and watch his early work. And he would say, hey, come in. And they would ask questions and he would help them out. But they had to want to do it. But when they did, they got a, you know, they got an art lesson from Michelangelo. That's that's priceless.
Absolutely. So the question that this begs about the Reds talking about how they're going to be this year is whether or not they are tanking, because they're often the first team that's mentioned when that dread word comes out of anyone's mouth. And my view personally is that they're not, because they're not consciously selling off every asset that they've got that can't be pinned to the floor. It's not like, you know, Pittsburgh and the White Sox, or are they tanking in a more stealthy fashion? I mean, do you have a view on that?
They're post tanking, but that doesn't mean they're going to be any good, you know, and one of their problems was they didn't tank. They didn't go to the bottom of the tank when they needed to. They waited too long to trade Aroldis Chapman and Todd Frazier and arguably Jay Bruce. That's the problem. I mean, where they are now is kind of in the middle because they didn't go all in on the tank when they needed to. You saw the Brewers, they had some assets and they did it at the right time. You saw the White Sox go all in and get rid of everything. So that's kind of where this team kind of, I don't think they went full tank soon enough. And so they didn't get enough from what they needed. And that's what's hurt them, is that they didn't full tank. And now they're kind of on the upswing, they hope. But I don't see this as a team that can be this year's Brewers, but I didn't see last year's Brewers as last year's Brewers either.
True. So we've talked a little bit about Castillo and hopefully Shed being in the bigs, but what else are we looking for to be a bright spot for the Reds this year? Is it Senzel and Winker probably?
Yeah, I mean, those are two guys that are interesting. Just because you talked about that Joey Votto approach, and I don't think either one of those guys are Joey Votto approaches because, again, nobody is. But, I mean, if he's Batman, you know, maybe Winker can be Robin. he might wear long pants. But, you know, there's that kind of approach. And I don't think – Jesse doesn't have the power that Votto does. I think people kind of forget the power that Votto has, especially opposite field. He's a strong guy. I think that's one of those things to watch. And then Nick Senzel. Nick Senzel is, again, an advanced tool, hitting tool. He's a plus defender as well. I'm not going to say he's a plus runner. He's a plus base runner. He's plus game speed as opposed to plus like just flat speed. Mm-hmm. He's a really good all around player. He's someone that I think is really going to be exciting to watch when he gets to the big leagues and what exactly they're going to do with him. Cause in spring training, he's in big league camp, but they're going to play him probably at third, at second a little bit, maybe some of the corner outfields because Eugenio Suarez had a really good year last year. I mean, that's a guy who had a fantastic defensive year and then had a pretty darn solid offensive year.
Okay, so there are some things that are there to enjoy. Darius, do you have any other questions about the Reds specifically?
I was just wondering that the Reds have kind of, I think, first the relievers and then the starters have set a couple of records for home runs given up.
Yes.
And just how much of that do you think is the park? I mean, it is notoriously hitter-friendly, and obviously the ball has changed from everything that we can tell so far. Do you think this is something that's just going to continue to be a problem pitching in Cincinnati, or is this more of a pitcher issue rather than the park?
It's a good combination of the two. I mean, this ballpark, since it's opened in 2003, you've seen a lot of bad pitching and a lot of home runs, and even the good pitchers have given up a lot of home runs. You know, Bronson, when Johnny Cueto was here, he would give up home runs, but he seemed to only give up solo home runs. And that's almost, you know, that was his big thing, was he'll give up the home run, but he didn't want runners on base. And that's what's going to really hurt you, because you're going to, you know, I've talked to Bronson Arroyo about this a lot. He just says, I'm going to give up home runs here. It just happens. I mean, they had, I think, five or six players with 25 home runs last year on the Reds offense. Scooter Jeanette, the guy who wasn't a full-time player until after the All-Star break, had 26 home runs. When you talk about a juiced baseball and a small park, it was a combination to give up a lot. And when Tim Adelman, you know, great guy, but here's a guy who was cut from independent league in suburban Cincinnati to start his career, is leads your league and your team in innings, you're going to have a rough pitching line, and especially in this park, it's going to make it worse.
Okay, great. I think that's enough. We've taken enough of your day. You've got to go off, and you've got to write about Tim Adelman. So before we let you go, I think it's appropriate for us to ask where we can find you on the internet, where we can find your writing, and where we can find the podcast too. So this is your stump. Please use it.
Yeah, at CTurn on Twitter and theathletic.com. I'm sure we'll take subscriptions and pounds as well. We will always be happy to take your money, no matter what kind it is. Yen, whatever you want to spend it in, we'll take it. But also at theathletic.com, at CTurn on Twitter. I'm really happy. I was excited to do this. Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem. And as always, you can find our Twitter at batflips_nerds, and you can find us at our website, which is batflipsandnerds.com. So that's a goodbye from me, and a goodbye from Darius, I guess, too.
Yeah, goodbye. And I would just say to people, it's been a slow off season, but I really encourage them to go and check out the podcast, Great American Dream. It's kind of a timeless thing, I think. The stories are not going to get old. And yeah. it's you know, I went through and basically listened to it in a couple of sittings because I really enjoyed it a lot. So yeah, if you're kind of out there and waiting for baseball news to happen, then I think there are a few better ways you can fill your time than by listening to that.
Well, thank you, Darius. Yeah. That's awesome. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's the Game of Thrones of podcasts in terms of wanting to binge on them. And I can vouch for that too.
Oh, very nice. Okay, I'll take that every day.
Okay, so thanks very much for your time, Trent. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and we'll be following you throughout the season and hopefully hear from you again soon.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks, guys.